Chapter 63. Back to Clooney. For some weeks I'd been staying with a group of Findhorn Foundation people on Airaid, a small island that was a stone's throw from both Mull and Iona, on the west coast of Scotland. At the outset, I'd really enjoyed the unique island lifestyle, but the longer I stayed, the more obvious the discordant interpersonal dynamics became. There appeared to be little hope of resolution, and I confess I was happy to return to Clooney. Even though my Airaid experience had caused a bit of a wobble, I'd signed up for the 4-week living in community guest, the LCG program, designed to give a deeper experience of day-to-day life in the community for those, like me, considering membership. Just like the members, we LCGers worked 2 shifts a day Monday to Friday. I returned to Clooney maintenance and for my first shift, my renovating experience proved useful as we blitzed a room for painting, sanding the walls, skirting boards, architraves, and window frames, before washing down all surfaces. A member focalized us for the morning. Earlier, he told me that he'd worked with his father, who was an interior decorator, so he was able to organize us to do what had to be done quickly and efficiently. I spent the remainder of the week sanding, undercoating and painting a set of wooden gates at the bottom of the garden. On Saturday morning, it was changeover day across the foundation, and Clooney House Care went into overdrive. There were rooms to be cleaned, and 100 beds to be stripped and remade, in readiness for next week's intake of guests. As it was high summer, all the foundation programs were booked out, and Clooney was bulging at the seams. Some Saturday mornings I worked with a member who was a kindred spirit. She was a strong, practical, artistic English woman. Our best ever Saturday morning effort was stripping and remaking 35 beds in 2 hours. What a team. I'd later discover she was a child of the famous Bloomsbury Group's Outer Circle. From noon on Saturday, the rest of the weekend was our own. As I'd be living at Clooney for the next 4 weeks, it was time to consider a creative project because my fingers were itching to make something. Even though I'd brought my tiny Alna Lotus sewing machine with me from Australia, I felt the urge to knit, rather than sew. Now that I was living in Scotland, I decided to have a crack at knitting a traditional fisherman's Guernsey. I was well aware that the Isle of Guernsey knitters had been making sweaters since the 15th century, using plain and pearl stitches to create an intricate all-over pattern. I found a pattern using 4-ply Emu brand wool, manufactured in the United Kingdom. As a recent arrival from the Antipodes, it did strike me as strange to be buying British-manufactured knitting wool named after a flightless Australian bird. Now I had a pattern, the wool, and the needles, I was ready to begin a demanding knitting project that involved a lot of counting and focused concentration. I soon discovered that tennis was a downtime activity on offer at Clooney. 2 courts left over from the 4-star grandeur of the Clooney Hill Hotel in its heyday had recently been refurbished. 2 of the newest members were keen tennis players, and they invited me to join them for regular late afternoon hitouts. We laughed a lot, and our time together gave us the opportunity to get to know each other, as we found our feet in this converted hotel that was filled with people who had meditation, good intentions, and vegetarian food in common. My second 4-week LCG block provided 2 distinctly different highlights worthy of comment. The first was an outing to 15th century Cawdor Castle, a half-hour drive from Clooney. I didn't know what to expect, but from the minute we arrived, I was captivated by the stark beauty of the castle's stone buildings outlined against the blue sky. Next, I was taken by the bursts of summer color throughout the extensive grounds, that included a walled garden. It was as though I'd been teleported to another time, an outlander experience of sorts. I was told that each summer, the Earl of Cawdor and his family move out of the castle and open a number of magnificently decorated rooms for tourists to ogle, offering commoners like me a rare peep into the lifestyle of the British aristocracy. Lastly, we were funneled out through the castle shop, chock full of quality merchandise beautifully displayed. I loved it all. Cawdor Castle combines both natural and man-made beauty, as well as a serious dose of distorted history, thanks to William Shakespeare's Macbeth, in which the Thane of Cawdor and his wife conspire to murder the King of Scotland and succeed. What treachery! What intrigue! Even if the plot isn't factual, it certainly adds to the mystique of the place. The second highlight came at one of our scheduled Thursday evening meetings. Eileen Caddy, co-founder of the foundation, was invited to join us. I clearly remember the rush of energy as she entered the room. As always, we began with a 5-minute meditation. Eileen then shared that in her meditation, she'd seen a pile of grain with the chaff being blown away by the wind. With the image came the words, "There is still much to be done," and, "You are all precious." Comforting words. I felt uplifted being in the presence of one of the venerated community founders, a rare brush with fame. Eileen Caddy presented as a motherly type, which was understandable, as she had 8 children. At the beginning of the LCG program, I made it clear to the focalizer that I was seriously considering membership, after which he immediately put the wheels in motion. I was told I was required to have 2 interviews. The first with guest program focalizers, those people with whom I'd spent most time since my arrival, and the second, with the personnel department. The second interview began with a short meditation, followed by a general discussion around a list of questions. Had I lived in groups before? How would I cope with sharing a room for a year? Did I have enough money? Was I aware I could make pocket money by making things in my own time? As a committed maker, I particularly liked the sound of this. At the end of the interview, it was unanimously agreed that I should join the orientation program, designed to give prospective members an even deeper understanding of the foundation's past and present. The 8-week program was to begin at the end of October, but before it began, I was required to do yet another 4-week LCG block. So, with my interviews out of the way, and 6 weeks to kill, I headed for London to deal with a number of bucket list outstandings, to be followed by an Outer Hebridean adventure. I sensed after completing the orientation program that unless something went terribly wrong, I'd be offered membership. If so, there'd be little time for gadding about the country, so, best I do whatever gadding about I wanted to do whilst I had the chance. What fun! On reflection. The Findhorn Foundation. I left Australia with the intention of becoming a member of the foundation. The catalyst for my decision had been the black and white photographic essay, titled Faces of Findhorn. As I leafed through the pages, I knew immediately that I'd visit, hopefully sooner rather than later, and, if things worked out, I'd stay for a while. As it turned out, it was sooner rather than later, because I decided to resign from my full-time lecturing job in Toowoomba and sell my Goulburn house. The cherry on the top was a hugely successful garage sale. As a result, the coffers were full to overflowing. But old habits die hard, so most of the booty was squirreled away before I headed off to Scotland. When I arrived at Cluny, I did the obligatory experience week, after which the how to become a member process became clearer. But I was in no hurry because, before leaving Australia, I'd systematically tied off all loose ends, both physical and emotional, so there was nothing to draw me back prematurely. In spite of the air raid hiccup, I remained excited at the prospect of living with this group of like-minded people, and maybe, just maybe, there would be an honest man amongst the membership for me. At this point, I'd not yet given up hope of a mutually supportive permanent relationship, because I was yet to discover I was already a complete human without a partner. But a partner did materialize, a most unlikely man 10 years my junior. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Facts. The Bloomsbury Set was a group of English writers, intellectuals, philosophers, and artists in the first half of the 20th century, including Virginia Woolf, John Maynard Keynes, E. M. Foster, and Lytton Strachey. My new friend's parents were peripheral players in this group. As a result, she was raised surrounded by these heavy-hitting intellectuals, and was a talented artist in her own right. The Guernsey sweater was traditionally hand-knitted on the island of Guernsey by fishermen's wives, using patterns passed down from mother to daughter. There were two styles, the plain working Guernsey, and a more decorative one for Sunday best. They were often knitted by prospective wives to demonstrate their industrious nature. Cawdor Castle. The oldest parts of the castle date to the 14th century. Originally called Calder Castle, in the early 19th century, the Earl at the time changed the name of the castle, town, and clan overnight, as he was keen to capitalize on the Thane of Cawdor's mention in Shakespeare's famous play, Macbeth, written in 1606. But we know that Shakespeare's story takes serious liberties with history. The historical King Macbeth ruled Scotland from 1040 to 1057, after his forces killed King Duncan I, in a battle near Elgin. According to the Cawdor Castle website, Macbeth was never Thane of Cawdor, as this was an invention of the 15th century writer Hector Boyce. Moreover, Calder, now Cawdor Castle, didn't exist during the lifetimes of Macbeth or Duncan, and the castle is not explicitly mentioned in the play. The 5th Earl of Cawdor is quoted as saying, "I wish the bard Shakespeare had never written his damned play." Outlander, not to be confused with the Outlander film, is an historical drama television series, based on the Outlander novels by Diana Gabaldon.